This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Today, my guest is none other than presidential candidate Patrick Little. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here. You're a former California candidate. And, of course, as I'm sure you've noticed, some people who had been firm Donald Trump supporters over the past few weeks are starting to say, maybe not. They're jumping off the Trump train. Some of them are joining the Yang gang. But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of movement going on. And also people are realizing that no matter what, a year from now during the primary season, there's really not going to be any point in voting for Trump in the primaries. So people have votes. And, you know, I'm saying that obviously you're somebody that people should take a look at.
And I think it's important to say here, if Donald Trump, instead of using dog whistles, had explicitly talked about issues facing whites as explicitly facing whites, and used the term white instead of saying traditional Americans and all that, when all of the stuff started coming down that was hugely anti-white, where they called him a white supremo sandwich and all that, the conversation could have been had then and there with his star power saying, well, why aren't whites allowed to advocate? Why aren't white people allowed to have group interests? I feel that if Donald Trump had run explicitly pro-white, I think right now the conversations that he would be having with the media, it would have red-pilled the entire nation. Or if he had become pro-white after he won and then explicitly said, look, white people are getting screwed. 55% of whites at the time of Trump's election said they felt that whites were systematically being discriminated against. And I'm sure all these people voted for him. That's a talking point that the media, how would they shut that down? Mm-hmm. I mean, what are they going to do? Not let the president appear on TV? Not let him...
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, obviously he's made, you can never go back and say this would have happened. If he had done such and such, this would have happened. At the same time, it's we're not really getting such great results. And, even he could have even stayed CivNat. He could be CivNat, civic nationalist. But still, when he's going on his routine that he does all the time of talking about Black unemployment being at the lowest levels ever, and Hispanic incomes reaching an all-time high, and Asian this, and American Indian that, he could at least throw in white people, and he's never even done that. He's never done that. And given that they're going to call him some people call him a Nazi, almost everybody's calling him a white nationalist, what has he got to lose?
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing. And, he's been attacked so much for simply saying that at Charlottesville, there were good people on both sides.
Yep. And these were all excellent opportunities for him to expose the people behind the power, to add in the word, dual citizens, at least. The phrase dual citizens or Jewish with the what the fake news is. And so all of the real issues are being sidestepped. The issue is, are whites being discriminated against? Are we being ethnically cleansed? Per, as you talked about with, I believe, Mark Collette and Andy Hitchcock on Dr. Duke's show, all of those 12 or 14 or 16 points of what defines a genocide, all those boxes are checked for whites. And this is an issue that needs to be had. This is a discussion that needs to be had, and it's not being had. And white people are becoming not just disenfranchised, but now they're disillusioned. And it's so terrible to hold up this thing in front of the white Americans that is hope, and then to just snatch it from them and crush them. This is to give people hope and then take it from them. I think what he's done is cruel and morally reprehensible. by not explicitly after he won saying, okay, white people are getting screwed, let's talk about what's happening to whites without being cruel to non-whites. You know, there's a moral way to approach this, and I think the way Dr. Duke does it, I think the way you address it, a lot of the people on the radio networks that you co-host on, they address these issues in a moral and just way that any logical or open mind is going to hear that message and say there's nothing wrong with what they're saying. Whites have the right to group advocacy the way mm-hmm. every other group does. And I, without doing the whole, what if Trump did this, mm-hmm. what if Trump did this, let me rephrase it and say, what if anyone were to be in power and bring this stuff up? Steve King, too, could have said, well, whites are getting screwed. He could have, he was already being nailed to the yeah. white supremo sandwich cross.
I don't want to get too harsh on Trump or Steve King, because I kind of look at these guys as being like maybe the boxer who goes in against, goes in as a big underdog and actually fights really well for several rounds, but gets beaten in the end. And I feel Trump actually, I think he took a lot of risks, and I think he really tried hard, but he's beaten. He's beaten. He might not be technically out, and he might come back. But, you know, right now he's beaten up, and Steve King is beaten up. I'm sorry to cut you off. Did you have something you needed to finish?
Well, the point I'm making is that what they're doing is they're alienating potential allies. There are lots of people with great talking points that I've been asking to jump into politics. When I was polling well, I had dozens of people promise to run for Senate, Governor, Congress, and now they're all having cold feet about it. None of the people that committed and promised to me to run on a platform where they explicitly said whites have interests and explicitly said that the deep state is Jewish, everyone's chickening out. And I think this is a terrible missed opportunity. While Trump is in power, if we have voices coming in and saying whites have interests, whites are getting screwed and it's by Jewish design, I think it would be impossible for Trump to not alienate his base, but alienate us. And so that's what needs to happen. People need to stop boxing shadows and watching a puppet show. The real fight is between the goyim and the Jewish elite. Mm-hmm. The real fight is between, you know, the white yes. people they're seeking to displace and also the Palestinians and the Jews that are trying to ethnically cleanse us.
Yeah,
and
no, you're absolutely right. Absolutely
that's the real
right.
fight. That is the real issue. And all of these other proxy issues are just window dressing to me at this point. At this point, what needs to be on the window or the screen needs to be the actual confrontation, discussion about what the actual conflict is.
Yeah.
This is the end game of the displacement of whites, and this is shaping up to be much like the revolutions in the past where they destroyed all of the intelligent people that opposed them. And that's another topic I wanted to get into.
Yeah.
But
let's get into it in just a minute. But it is tough. People do get destroyed. And you can understand why people in certain situations hold back. Now, I was listening to Fascination, which I think is a really good show. And I don't want to get into feuds. Maybe I'm doing it already. I think it's a really good show. I think Jazz Hands is real smart. I like the guys on there. This guy Ethnarch, really smart. But you know something? Sometimes, obviously they often talk specifically about Jewish power, but sometimes they just go off on these tangents and are talking about German immigrants to the United States in the Civil War era and the role that they played or this or that, and they get really, really, they can go on and on and on and not mention the Jewish gorilla in the room. And, you know, I think we do have to stay focused, and you are very, very focused.
But I tell you one thing, if Jazz Hands were to step off from the anonymous talking heads sphere and step into the political arena, I would consider endorsing him and dropping out of the race. And I'm not going to confirm who or who I have not asked to run, but I know most of these top personalities. I've had conversations, many in real life, with these anonymous big podcast personalities, and I beg them to run for office, and they won't do it.
And they might have very good reasons. It's really hard to know. You know, so I don't want to go there, but we have you. And well, I'm happy to have you.
I see myself, right now, I see myself as a placeholder. When I was running in 2018, I was begging dozens of people I thought were my betters to take my place before the nomination and signature period, where it wasn't too late to drop out and endorse someone else.
That's important. And that's something that can be done.
Seeking my better. And that can be done. Right now, I will gladly step aside if there's someone that has a higher verbal intelligence, a better grasp of the issues, but is willing to address Jewish power and is willing to be an advocate for whites without alienating other groups that advocate for their groups as groups, I'll step aside.
Okay, so this is actually a very important point, and I'm not sure if everybody understands it, but typically, and it may vary from state to state, but I've been involved in a lot of states, and typically, when you're passing around petitions to get on a ballot, part of the process is there is a provision for replacing the name of the candidate. And so I remember in 2000 or 2004 passing around petitions to get Ralph Nader on the ballot, and he didn't have a vice presidential candidate picked out, but you have to have somebody's name on the petition. So it's just random associate was on the ballot, on the petition. And then later on, that name got switched out before the petitions were certified. And there's a process for that. But what you're saying is you would even allow, I mean, you're going to get these signatures, and you could have your own name switched out and somebody else put in. Is it?
I'm even willing to share signature gatherers. I've had people pledge to gather signatures for me in a bunch of different states to get on the ballot, and you know that's going to include New Hampshire, the Carolinas, and the other battleground states. Especially, we're going to make sure we get all the signatures we need.
Yeah, but it's a tough process. And
well, I've done it before. I did it in California, yeah, which, as you pointed out, I believe in a private conversation, that's easier than a sum of a lot of states.
California is easier than say North Carolina. From my recollection, it can change from year to year, but North Carolina, I believe, is extremely difficult. I think Oklahoma and Texas are pretty difficult.
There was another idea I floated when I had dozens of different people, and this included Jared Howe, this included some other podcasters. They promised that they would run in 2020. And what I'm saying is that let's say that we have someone running for governor, someone running for the congressional district, and someone running for a Senate seat, if that's open, same as a governor's seat, and someone running for president. We could even have multiple candidates for each of those seats. And if someone stops to sign one of them, they'll usually sign all of them. And I see in front of the Safeway or these other grocery stores where they are allowed to set up ballot signature collections to get on the ballot for the petitions, oftentimes they'll have 5, 6, 10 candidates that they're gathering signatures for as a group. And what I'm saying is that we could easily do this. I mean, why divide all of our different resources? Why, you know, this is like chaff in the wind. You bundle it together into a cord, or you bundle together a bunch of twigs into a strong axe handle. And I could have one of my signature gatherers have cooperative agreement with other people that are running for office. If it's, you know, if there's an overlap, I'm gathering signature here. This happens to be the congressional district for this guy. Let's at least get signatures for both me.
You can do that.
I've got one.
And I don't want to get into too much nuts and bolts of this type of thing, because it's not necessarily the best radio. But here's something else. In a lot of states, it depends on the state, but in a lot of states, because you're running for the Republican nomination, you're going to need, in some states, you're going to need to designate delegates who would be the people that if you win enough votes, then, you know, your delegates have to be designated. Or in other states, the delegates are actually running independent of you, but you have to have people that you like, that you know, you're endorsing, but they're actually having to gather their own signatures. There's a lot of stuff, but it doesn't make for good radio. But it's the type of thing that at some point needs to be talked about. I want to go back a bit, though. This is about, you know, some people being able to name the Jew, some people not, and some people that we wish might. Now, Tucker Carlson, he's got such a big platform, and if he started talking specifically about Jews, he would lose that platform. He might be able to develop an even better platform, you know, but at any rate, I was just watching his show before we started taping, and this is Thursday night, and anybody can go back and watch it. And about 10 minutes into the show, he had been talking about the whole Russia collusion thing, and then he invited on somebody. I don't remember the name of the person he invited on, but if you go back, he's, you know, he's like a middle-aged white guy, and he starts talking about the people who were behind the Trump dossier. Okay, so the people who are behind the Trump dossier have raised well over $10 million, or over $10 million, and are continuing to, this work and this propaganda effort. So you're talking about Glenn Simpson, Christopher Steele, the, you know, the British agent, the Fusion GPS people. Now, these are kind of goyish fronts. But Tucker asked the important question. He says, well, you said they raised $10 million. Where are they getting it from? Well, the guy answers, George Soros, Rob Reiner, Meathead from All in the Family,
yep,
and this guy Sayer, who is raising all the money for the impeach Trump movement.
Also, Steyer.
Now, nobody on the show said, "Oh, all three Jews," but they're all three Jews, and you know, we need this. You know what we might need? Here's an idea. We might need a show that is, you know, a couple of guys or even just one guy sitting around watching Tucker on TV. And then every time, you know, somebody comes on, hey, that guy's a Jew. You know, could you imagine that? That might be actually a really good podcast. People could watch Tucker and then they'd know who's Jewish in real time. How's that?
That is a great idea. What you could do is have an embedded thing of whatever media is being played and then have then like a chat below it that's really just our guys, not an open chat, just a commentary in real time where the Jew confirmed or something comes up next to the person's name or something.
Yeah, I think you're allowed to have stuff up on the background. I don't know how all the copyright laws work and all. Okay. Well, you know, this idea of having a few goys out in front and then a whole lot of Jewish money behind them, that's not exactly new. It's been tried before, right?
Yeah, that actually reminds me of a book that I've been making an audiobook with commentary out of called The Nameless War. A very, very important book. The meat and bones of it is only about 60 or 70 pages. And he goes into this. So in France, prior to the Reign of Terror, are you familiar with the Reign of Terror in France?
Yes, I am. The French Revolution, the Reign of Terror, and the guillotine. Yep.
So in order to establish the revolutionary prerequisites for that, the Jews used a system of entrapment for a bunch of different French aristocrats, including one of them called the Duke d'Orléans. And this guy became a pivotal Shavuot during the lead-up to the revolution and the beginning of it. And so he had a gambling problem, and they entrapped him into massive gambling debts, and then they seized his brand, his little palace called the Palace Royal, or the Royal Palace, I guess. It was just, that's what they called his aristocratic pad. And they turned it into a mill. So in part of it, they set up Jewish printing presses where they were running the propaganda, but the propaganda appeared to be coming out of the Duke d'Orléans private estate. So it didn't look like Jews were doing it. At the same time, he was made in order to service his debt to hold functions, orgies, something like subversive Jewish clubs, revolutionary meetings and stuff at his palace, giving it the appearance that a French aristocrat was engaging in the subversion as opposed to the Jews he was in debt to. And they laid, largely from his Palace Royal, the revolutionary groundwork. This is also what happened when crypto-Jews in the 1640s, and this is all in that book, and please listen to chapters 1 and 2 on Little Revolution, my channel on YouTube, my candidate's channel. The Jews set up no less than 6,000 different propaganda pamphlets, most of which were disguised as ultra-egalitarian, commoner-oriented stuff. So, and they did the same thing. They set up...
We got about 20 seconds.
Yeah. So they set up all of these front organizations for what wound up being Jewish propaganda mills and Jewish centers of intrigue and entrapment of other people to help set the groundwork for revolution. And exactly that's happening here.
Wow. Okay, we'll be right back.
homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hand seemed to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Welcome back to the show. So, you know, you mentioned the French Revolution, and within the past month, I got done listening to, I think it was a 12-hour lecture series on the French Revolution, maybe 18. It was everything from the, you know, the Louis, the Bourbons, to, you know, Napoleon and the fall of Napoleon. But, you know, here's the thing. And, you know, this is from a top professor. But here's the thing. You can listen to all of this stuff, but if they're not willing to say who's Jewish, what do you really get out of it?
Now, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I have one question to ask, because I'm done with it all. Did the Jews have much to do with the French Revolution?
Well, this is an excellent point that Captain Archibald Ramsay makes in his book, and he says, they're just like, you know how everyone knows about the Gulag Archipelago from Solzhenitsyn, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, there was a very famous guy that wrote books about the French Revolution, the same as Solzhenitsyn wrote about the Red Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an equivalent book to Solzhenitsyn's 200 Years Together, which is where Solzhenitsyn comes out and says, this is how the Jews laid the groundwork for the revolution, and this is how all the atrocities described in the Gulag Archipelago were coordinated and committed by Jews. And so, I forget the name of it, it's, if you look at chapter 2 of Archibald Ramsay's The Nameless War, it talks about it, but in volume 2 of his work, which is never reprinted, you can't find it in academia, you can't find it in the libraries, the same guy who's famous and everyone refers to as a go-to guy for learning about the French Revolution and is chronicling of it, also published a book, a volume in the series, saying that it was all Jews. And so this is just like Solzhenitsyn, where in the media, even Ben Shapiro will quote Gulag Archipelago, but won't mention the other forbidden book that isn't printed, that isn't in the academic libraries. And the same thing happened with the
Our History Together, is that what it's called? Or
what? Say again?
Well, Solzhenitsyn's book, was it called Our History Together?
Years Together, which I'm on chapter 5 of it right now. Great book.
So, I mean, with the French Revolution, like I said, I listened to all these lectures, and I know there's a role. Napoleon famously emancipated the Jews, and, you know, you hear about banking interests and this and that, but nothing was really talked about. You know they were there, and it's just like today. So most people today, unless they've got Judar, unless they listen to shows like this one, they watch Tucker and they hear this guy and he says these three names: Soros, Rob Reiner, and the Steyer guy. And they don't know. They don't get the takeaway. Yep, it's a bunch of Jews that are funding this. They don't get that. And if you don't get that, You're not getting it at all.
By the way, I have the equivalent to Solzhenitsyn in terms of naming the Jew in the French Revolution. There was McNair Wilson in The Life of Napoleon, and also Sir Walter Scott, The Life of Napoleon, Volume 1. These are the things where otherwise these people are referred to as chroniclers of the French Revolution and the Rise of Napoleon. But they also wrote works where they named the Jew, and this is hidden. And there's also one other one. If you listen to my chapter 2, it's only like a 40-minute listening. On Little Revolution, my YouTube channel, I read aloud, I narrate The Nameless War, and you'll hear all about it there, how the works that tie in where the Jews were the ones behind the French Revolution have all been hidden. Even Robespierre and all these people, these were useful idiots. And once they realized that the Jews were going to kill everyone that wasn't being a complete slave to them in the Shabbos Goy, they even started chopping off heads. They wound up killing the Duc d'Orléans and Robespierre. Mm-hmm. These people that had been useful idiots in laying the groundwork for the revolution, once they realized where it was leading, and even they didn't realize the Jews were going to seize power for themselves. Mm-hmm. The Revolutionary Committee in Paris wound up being something, some vast majority of it was Jewish. I forget the exact percentage.
See, I don't know this stuff. And like I said, I just got done listening to a 12, 18-hour lecture series, and I don't know. I walk away with saying I really don't know anything about the revolution.
And that's by design, because they omit the key stuff that ties it all in together. So just listen to the 40-minute thing I did the other day.
I will do that. Chapters
1 and 2 on Little Revolution.
I will
type in Little Revolution on YouTube, and I go into it, I name the Jew. I need to go back and study it for talking points.
But the
entire French Revolution, the entire thing was Jews and their useful idiots, and the parallel that he then draws in chapters, I believe, 3 through 6, which I'm going to narrate soon, shows how this is exactly the same cookie-cutter pattern that the Jews use. So Archibald Ramsey talks about there are two stages for Jewish revolution. Number one, first stage, is the complete demoralization, Bezmenov style, of a country.
And we got about 30 seconds before the break.
The seizure of the printing presses, the seizure of the means of propaganda, and the demoralization of the people and the state. And number two come the knockout blows once the state is destabilized. And at that point, the useful idiots are lined up and killed, and the Jews seize power for themselves. This was exactly what happened in Cromwell's England, in the Reign of Terror in France, as well as the Red Revolution of 1917. In Russia. You must read The Nameless War by Sir Archibald Ramsey.
And then, you know, we have I heard on the Daily Show, or the TDS show, Mike Enoch saying he didn't know whether they're the Young Turks were Jewish. You know, he's heard they're crypto-Jews. And a lot of them were not crypto-Jews. A lot of them were open Jews.
From Salonika, Greece, yes, displaced Jews from the Balkans, and this is all laid out. I've made a video to this extent. I'll post that on Twitter before we show it.
Let's get into this after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Has a radio program on. Go ahead and plug your program real quick, Dr. Slattery.
Okay, my program is National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And while we're live streaming now on Patrick's channel, I am recording a show for future use on my channel, either for tomorrow, Friday, or for next Tuesday. This is it is the evening of March 21st. On Thursday evening. And so I have that show on RBN. You can go to republicbroadcasting.org if you want to catch it live, or you can go to the Patrick Slattery YouTube channel. I also am Don Black's sidekick on Stormfront Radio, and because of Don Black's move and some other issues, I've actually been filling in for him for the past few weeks as the main host. So those are my gigs. I also help out with Dr. David Duke's show. But, yeah, go to the Patrick Slattery YouTube channel or go to nationalbugle.com, and you'll find all the content that I make.
Well, I'm glad to have you on, Dr. Slattery. And so we've got some people just now tuning in, and I'll read off some questions we have from the chat later. But we just started recording a program earlier, and we talked about Jewish roles in revolutionary movements and traditionally how they have set up the pre-revolutionary environment and destabilized the state and the elite and then delivered the knockout blows. And I was hoping maybe we could talk about how they've set this up here in this country.
We sure can. So And the thing is, when you're talking about this country, you run into the question of, really, where do you start? And, you know, there were certainly Sephardic Jews who were here very early on and involved in the slave trade. And if you look into the middle of the 1800s, you'll see, I think it was Ashkenazi, not Sephardic, but the Secretary of Treasury of the Confederate States of America, what was his name, Benjamin something, or something Benjamin. You had some Jews.
His last name was Benjamin.
Yeah, his last name was Benjamin. But really, it starts to accelerate with the large Jewish immigration into the United States in the late 1800s, and most, you know, you're talking about mostly poor Jews, but you also had some rich bankers. You had some rich people who were able to finance the community, and of course, you had the community, you know, the ethnocentrism, which was part and parcel of Jewish culture going back so long. And it's so, where do you start? And you get World War, you know, the Federal Reserve and the World War One, and you know, there's already a lot of power there, getting us into World War Two and a lot of things that were getting set up then. 1965 Immigration Act, and it's just accelerating and accelerating. And now you've got what I would consider the Jew d'etat, the Jewish coup d'etat against Donald Trump. And the power is increasing. It's hard to just go back and say, where do you start? Where do you go back and say, where do you start?
Well, it goes back far. And I'd say the revolutionary Jews came over much later than the Jews that laid the foundation. The foundation, of course, was financial. And I'm paraphrasing Archibald Ramsey, who wrote The Nameless War, when he said essentially that first Jews buy their way into the elite, or they entrap members of the elite. Then they use that to establish revolutionary beachheads. So, of course, the Jews were in charge of the slave trade for the most part in this country, and they made a lot of money off of the slave trade. Later, the real danger came, of course, in the form of the private central banks. There were three different incarnations of which we're living under one of them right now, which presidents like Andrew Jackson fought against and successfully destroyed. These were beachheads financially in the country. And really, the real danger to this country came when the Russian Jews started coming in the 1880s and 1890s. Do you know what triggered all of the Russian Jews to come into America?
Well, there's politics in Russia, and you had, among the czars, you had more philo-Semitic Jews and more, you know, harsher Jews. And I guess there was some laws that were passed by the father of Tsar Nicholas, right? Wasn't it the father? And didn't he get assassinated? Refresh me.
Yeah, Tsar Nicholas I tried to subsidize Jewish integration into the agricultural life of Russia, which failed.
Tsar Alexander
II then, starting in the 1850s, opened up the gates wide, acting on enlightenment philosophy, letting the Jews flood into the cultural institutions and pretty much take over a lot of the press and a lot of the sin industries throughout Russia. And it was under
Tsar Alexander III.
And after the Jews executed his father, the Jews assassinated on the night before the Purim starts. So you know how we invaded Iraq the first time on Purim, the first day? Well, on the eve of Purim, in the late 19th century, the Jews killed
Tsar Alexander II.
He was the one who liberated the Jews. He was like the Napoleon of Russia.
May I just say, wish you a happy Purim. Purim is just ending now as we're recording. I guess is it sunset where you are?
What I'm saying is that they killed
Tsar Alexander II,
a Jewish assassin, on the eve of Purim in Russia. In the 19th century, and then Tsar Nicholas II came in, and there were a bunch of pogroms against the Jews in response to the Jewish assassination of the king, the Tsar. And Tsar Nicholas II actually stopped them, and all evidence points out, and this is from Solzhenitsyn's 200 Years Together, Tsar Nicholas II stopped the pogroms, and the common people from the bottom up were trying to remove the Jews from power, but Tsar Nicholas II stopped them. But in order, a concession that Tsar Nicholas II, and this is the reason all the Jews started leaving Russia en masse to the United States, was because Tsar Nicholas II said, okay, well, the commoners are really mad because of the usury and stuff they do. Basically, the peasants run up a huge tab to the Jewish taverns after the harvest, and then the Jews own the whole next crop because they get the goyim drunk and then get them to sign contracts promising away all of their next harvest while they're drunk to keep on getting more drinks. And so Tsar Nicholas II, just like in the state of New Hampshire, said that all liquor must then be sold through the state. So instead of Jews owning all the taverns, and Jews largely made their living off from the sin industry of liquor sales and tavern ownership, once it became that Jews could no longer vertically own the whole process of liquor manufacture and sale, at that point the state came in, and at this point, once the state of Russia was in charge of the sale of liquor as opposed to private Jews, a bunch of them lost their living and they just came over here. And at that point, these revolutionary Jews, combined with the German Jew bankers that were here, started up the huge program against Russia for having had the sin of removing Jews from sin industries under Tsar Nicholas II. Anyhow, the point I'm making here is that limitations were placed, just as in 1930s Germany, on Jews' ability to participate in sin industries because they were using it to destroy the common people. And it was after the Russian state intervened in the Jewish control of the liquor business and stopped the peasants from essentially getting fleeced when they were drunk by Jews getting them to sign away their next harvest, that they poured into the United States. And at that point, the Jews began laying the revolutionary groundwork. Now, this is when the revolutionary Jews came in. So, as Ramsey talks about in his book, the first thing Jews do to a government they wish to replace is they get it heavily indebted. And they get destabilized the social foundations, and the Jews take control of the means of propaganda, which was presses at the time in revolutionary France or 1640s Britain or 1917 Russia. And then they deliver the revolts that bring the state to its knees when it's already wobbling and about to collapse from the debt and the financial hardship and the embargoes. At that point, the Jews bring the civil unrest, and that comes in the form of the Levellers' Revolution of the 1640s under Cromwell. It comes in the form of the Reign of Terror, as led by Jews during 1790s France. And then it came again in 1905, which failed, and then successfully in 1917 as the Bolshevik uprising of the proletariat, which was all led by Jews. And the segue, this whole conversation is coming into saying that the Jews have laid the revolutionary groundwork here in this country, and they couldn't do a workers' uprising here like they could otherwise, so they had to bring in replacement populations. The proletariat equivalent of for here and under the new Jewish elite here, the equivalent of the proletariat is then the non-white population that the Jews are using their propaganda to incite against us. So here the former serfs and the people, the commoners that became the proletariat, are analogous in Russia to today the all of the non-whites that are being told that, you know, white supremacism this, white supremacism that, the whites are responsible for all your woes, you know, Harvard is all whites, you know, we're hiding all of the Jewish crimes and overrepresentation behind the blanket term white, and we're going to be left holding the bag, and we're going to be blamed for everything the Jews have done. And there's been generations of anti-white propaganda, and as the percentage of the population that is non-white rises, so is also rising the level of propaganda against white people, where even just a white kid confidently smiling back at someone who is hurling all sorts of racial insults at him becomes the justification for calls to genocide by Jew propagandists on Twitter and stuff. And so I'd say the Jews right now are preparing to deliver the knockout blows in terms of social unrest the way they delivered them during all of the other times where they laid the revolutionary framework. So they laid the revolutionary framework under Charles I's England with Cromwell. They laid it in the during the reign of in the lead up to the Reign of Terror in France. They laid it again in 1917 in Russia, and they tried to also do this in Germany. They tried to create a revolt in 1918 and 1919 in Germany, and the Jews actually seized powers. They succeeded through the destabilization of the German state and then the propagandized uprising. They were able to seize power in Bavaria.
And yes, so in Bavaria, and Saxony too, and Hungary at the same time.
And Hungary as well, and they also, to some extent, had success in other countries. The Ukraine, they attempted to do this. The reason for the Holodomor, the genocide of the Ukrainians, is because their national spirit was so strong. And that's also why they said Germany must perish, is because the veterans there successfully suppressed the bottom-up revolution that came after the country was toppled from the top down. So, essentially, Archibald Ramsey talks about in The Nameless War, which I've been narrating on this channel. I've got two very good edited chapters up. There are more to come. Where they destabilize the state from the top down. They destroy the foundation of the state economically. They destroy the indigenous elite's control of the mechanisms of propaganda. And the Jews seize it under frontmen. Name-changing Jews often in America here, but often in the past they actually hired useful idiots to be the fronts, like the Duc d'Orléans in France, or Cromwell in revolutionary 1640s Britain. And at this point, they're actually just like do you know another term for the Reign of Terror in 1790s France?
What's the other term?
The Massacre of the Blondes.
Oh. Oh. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to insert something here. Because, yeah. It's very interesting what you're talking about, and there you certainly have all of these, you know, historical trends. I look at things a little bit, you know, when you talk about, it sounds like talking about a plan. They're planning to do this or they're planning to do that, and I don't think there is a plan. I think there are plans, and I think there are non-plans. So what I mean is that I don't think there is a script, a plan that is being carried out in a step-by-step manner. I think there, you know, if you're talking about back in the old days or if you're talking about now, there are certain organizations and groups that meet and, you know, they might say, oh, this is our agenda, this is what we would like. I don't think there's a single one. And I think what's going on now... I don't think it's any more planned than the way wolves chase an elk. The wolves don't have to plan it; they all kind of know their role. You know what I mean?
I think Dr. Duke made a good point of this. I believe on today's show he mentioned that there doesn't need to be formal coordination. This is something they do instinctively. They're raised to hate the goy, and they're instinctually, they have that very high group in-group preference. Arguably it's genetic, and this is what they do. This is the externality of the way they're socialized and their biological predispositions.
We all have group preferences, but it's not necessarily, it's, you know, not every person and not every group has the same level of group preference. That we don't all have the same level of ethnocentrism, just like we don't all have the same level of, you know, innate math skill, for instance. It can vary. And the point I was trying to make on Dr. Duke's show earlier today was that it's not that Jews are, you know, are uniquely ethnocentric, but they have a high level of ethnocentricity, and maybe a very high level. Maybe it's almost record levels. Who knows? Maybe Andaman Islanders are higher, but what difference would that make? But also, they have, through their power and through their power in society over the past many decades, have also been able to repress any ethnocentrism or any acting on ethnocentrism among their main rival, which is the white European populations.
I agree 100%. They see solidarity as their strength, and as you can see through the Birthright Israel program, through their almost unanimous support for the State of Israel, granted they'll have debates about how to best secure Israel, but overall Jews support Israel almost to the left, to a T, or almost to the last one of them. And the point that I'm making here is that I was showing what Sir Archibald Ramsey referred to as a cookie cutter conceptually, the way they do it. And this cookie cutter formula has been employed. There's been massive propaganda against the original elite here, which I guess would be white Anglo-Saxons or whatever. At the same time, the other preconditions are also met. Mm-hmm. So a revolutionary, so England, they experience financial troubles to help facilitate the agitation of the commoners against the aristocrats and the king and the aristocrats that were loyal to him. In France, King Louis was entrapped into one form of debt after another. He had a Jew economic advisor that just continuously got the kingdom more and more and more in debt to the point where they lost their ability to refinance their national debt in France. And at this point, is when the death blow came to the existing elite. The same thing happened to Russia. They strangled Russia with embargoes. They strangled Russia by cutting off her trade, by not letting Russia raise money on the bond markets in Frankfurt or New York or in London. And this is also what they did to Germany when they failed to deliver the knockout blow. They destroyed the economy, triggered hyperinflation, had people starving, had massive disease, and they tried to use that then as the collapsed economic status of the state as a way to facilitate the revolution. And what I'm saying, the commonality here, the most obvious one is, which one of those prerequisites do you think is the most obvious one in the United States, out of the overburdening indebtedness, the destruction of the morals?
And we'll be right back after the break.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake?
I'd say what sticks out the most is a level of indebtedness of this country. There's no way this country will ever be able to repay its debts, the same way that King Louis no longer had any hope of repaying his national debt. The same way that Tsar Nicholas III could not even raise monies abroad, didn't even have the money to import stuff into Russia when he was being hamstrung economically. And I would say the stage is set for the economic collapse of this country. And I think they're going to do it, because right now we're being propped up by being able to export our debt. And I think they're going to pull the rug out from under us, because too many goyim are waking up. And I think they want us, they want the next stage brought on, which in every case, the Levelers Revolution of the 1640s, the Reign of Terror in France in the 1790s, and also 1917 Russia and all these other Jewish revolutions, as they wound up lining up and killing anyone that pointed out the fact that it was Jews. Now, there was one man, and this is in chapter 2 of Archibald Ramsey's book, that was one of the useful idiots. I believe it was Robespierre or d'Arlin. Mm-hmm. And in the Revolutionary Council, he stood up and said, there is a hostile foreign element here that is controlling this revolution. This revolution comes from without. I've been one of their idiots. And that night he was poisoned because he was starting to drop the red pills to the people in Paris to let them know, this isn't my revolution. I'm trying to save the king's life here. I wanted this to be a constitutional monarchy. I wanted us to have a Magna Carta. I didn't want everyone that was in power to be killed. And once he saw the writing on the wall, even his own head rolled. He was poisoned that night. Mm. And I think this could be analogous to Trump. If Trump really had good intentions, but thought he could cooperate with the Israelis or with these Jewish power brokers, the campaign finance bundlers, these mega donors that pump the black money in that can now be pumped in since Citizens United, et cetera, et cetera. I think Trump could be analogous to the Duc d'Orléans, where he is now, you know, he had second thoughts about having cooperated with them, kind of took steps towards naming them, hinted at it, and this is the same thing that happened to either it was the Duc d'Orléans or Robespierre in France, where he tried to warn the public that he had cooperated with these people, but he regretted it. Mm-hmm. And this is analogous because Trump is screwed unless he names a Jew, I think. I don't see any situation where Trump loses the election and he gets to stay out of prison or the Jews don't have him executed.
I don't know. If he names a Jew, I think I can envision scenarios where he actually does get out of office. But he is, you know, the thing is right now he's so defeated. And if he's defeated now, and if he remains ineffectual for the next 18 months and loses the election, they might let him get away because, you know, he's no longer a threat, right? He would be completely impotent. So they might not put him in jail. It's hard to say. I'm not the best prognosticator. But who knows? I mean, I would certainly like him or somebody. And, you know, for him at this point, what does he have to lose? Because he's not going to go down the way things are going now. The way he'll go down in history is somebody who maybe shook things up a little bit, but was extremely ineffectual. He's going to go down as an Andrew Johnson type of president. One thing I want to say, I don't know what Archibald Ramsey thinks. I think he's come across a formula, and I think that formula is valid, but I don't know if, you know, any Jew is consciously aware of this formula. Well, this has been a lot of fun. The interview goes on and on. If you want to hear the rest of it, you're going to have to tune back again tomorrow for more of this exciting interview with Patrick Little.